We're going to be studying 2 Samuel chapter 6, so if you want to get your Bibles out or your tablets or your phones and pull open the Bible to 2 Samuel chapter 6, now would be a great time for you to do that. Hopefully you have an outline in your hand that was handed to you on the way in, and that would be so you can take notes. And it's not just the notes that are there, the fill-ins, but you can, even if God brings a thought to your mind or something that he reminds you of, write it down. If God says it, it's worth writing down. This past week, I installed new tires on the rear of my truck. That's it. That's good, right? Well, because I am under the delusion that I am some kind of car mechanic, I do my tires differently than everyone else on the face of the earth. For me, I order my tires as cheap as I can get them online, and they come delivered right to my driveway. Then what I do, like I did this week, so with both rear tires on my truck, I jack up the back of my truck right in the middle, lift the belt, both tires right off the ground with a floor jack, lifting both tires at once, and I remove both tires. Then what do I do with them? I race to my buddy's shop because I got a guy. Everybody else have a guy? I got a guy. So I go to my guy, and he changes my tires for me. So here it is. My truck now, I have the tires off, they're in the back of my wife's van, and my truck is sitting like a tripod. It has two front tires on the ground, and it has a floor jack, which you roll around, and it's just precariously holding the back of the truck up on these three points. Well, I'm with my buddy. They're at his shop, and my phone rings, and it's my son Caleb. KK, as we call them. Now, I knew by the way it rang. This is a trouble ring. This is just problems. So I pick it up, the phone, I answer, "Hey, KK, what's up?" I'm all happy. "Hey, what's up?" Dad, do you remember your truck? "Yeah, I remember it. Well, I heard a loud crash, and I went to look, and your truck is laying in the driveway like a dead soldier. And I raced home to find this." There you go. This is what Pastor Drew's week's like. Now, racing home. I kind of knew what I was going to find. I didn't have that picture. And the whole way home, all I could think about was, how in the world am I going to be able to get that crushed jack out of there? How in the world am I going to pick that truck back up again? And how do I get the new wheels that my buddy just installed for me? How do I get those new wheels under it, get it high enough to get the new wheels under it, and return my truck back to its proud stance? Well, friends, if you're joining us tonight for our Bible study, you will find that the nation of Israel had fallen off its jack, and it had been crushed terribly. And it's now Israel's new king, King David, who faced the responsibility of lifting his country up. How in the world am I going to get Israel back up after they've crashed off their jack? How is David going to right the broken ship that Israel is? And how is he going to set God's people back on their sturdy and their healthy feet? Well, that's where we're headed tonight, gang. But first, allow me to bring you up to speed if you're joining us for the first time tonight. The time of our Bible study here is about 1000 BC. And the previously divided nation of Israel, they had been divided, has all of them appointed David as their new king, and that brings unification to their country. And now David, you'll remember him, he was the shepherd boy who killed Goliath, but he's now matured. He has grown from a boy who loved God intensely into a man who loves God with his whole heart. The enthusiastic shepherd boy has developed into a Renaissance man of passion, a Renaissance man of creativity, a Renaissance man of strength. Everything David does, he does all the way. He is a man of strong conviction in that he lives out what he believes at any cost. David is also powerfully loyal, not just to God, but to his friends, to his leaders. And it is this character that has grown David into the decorated warrior and the highly esteemed leader that he is. And David knows, if Israel were a pickup truck, well, it fell off the jack. It's laying in a driveway like a dead soldier and needs to be repaired. So let's pick up the story of David as he begins his rule over Israel. What is he going to do? And this is as it's recorded in the Bible in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 1, says, then David again gathered all the elite troops in Israel, 30,000 in all. He led them to Baala of Judah with the full intention of bringing back the Ark of God. Okay, now, I don't want you to miss this first important action of David. David, when he takes over, when he finds what I found in my driveway, he doesn't whine. He doesn't complain. He doesn't fret about what's broken. Instead, he gets right to work. He knows broken can get fixed. And he grabs the bull by the horns and he goes at it. So how does David go about doing this? Point one, he put God back in the center of the community. Now he does that, gang, by going to get the Ark of the Covenant. Remember Raiders of the Lost Ark? That one? That's the Ark. You may remember what the Ark was. And if you don't, the Ark was a special box that God had Israel make. They made this box for their worship place called the Tabernacle. It was a tented worship center that was mobile. And this Ark, this rectangular golden Ark, served as the crown jewel of God's mobile temple. Inside that big box were the Ten Commandment tablets. Yeah, they saved them. They kept them in there. Inside that box was Aaron, Moses' brother, his budded staff, the staff that he held that God made it bud, and also a container of manna that they had saved. But most importantly, this ark was where God's presence would actually come and reside right on the top of that box, and God would sit there. Everything about the ark was symbolic, everything. And it was designed by God to explain himself and to explain our relationship with him. God's intention was for the ark to be mobile. That means to always travel where Israel went. On the very top, between these two outstretched angels' wings, was a place known as God's seat, the mercy seat, where God would meet with his liaison, the high priest. Interestingly enough, the top itself wasn't solid. It was a see-through grate. And this symbolized that God is watching down from heaven, seeing into his people. I think the most symbolic of all, though, was that the rings for handling the ark were not at the top, they were not at the middle, they were at the bottom. This is what the priests had to slide poles through, and as they carried it, it required them to delicately balance the ark and put a lot of care into every step with God. And as for King David, as far as David was concerned, he wanted all of that. He wanted all of that back in the tabernacle, and he wanted all those concepts back smack dab in the center of the lives of Israel. At least that was David's intention. This is why we read that he takes his best 3,000 men and he goes to retrieve the ark that has basically been in storage in Baala. Friends, David's first leadership act is a good one. He knows God has not been the central figure in Israel's life. Instead, God had basically been tossed into a storage unit outside of Israel and outside of the center of the people's hearts. For years, Israel had followed an unstable king in King Saul. And through that whole mess, Israel had fallen prey to a divisive plan that would divide them as people. God's people had learned to think outside of God's desire and God's command. But now, David wants to refocus them. Refocus them on God. And so David goes to get the ark. David wanted the ark right back in the middle of Israel. He wanted God's seat to be where people looked for wisdom. He wanted the ark to serve as the reminder that God was with them, in their midst, looking down on them. He wanted Israel to handle their relationship with God delicately and with great care. Like I said, David knew what he was doing, and he actually shows us the way. For you and me, we need to deal with finances that have fallen off the jack and crashed. Maybe we have parenting issues that need to be addressed. No matter what it is, no matter how badly crashed it seems, and it's lying in our driveway like a dead soldier, it can get repaired. But we have to get the right help. And David shows us that the ultimate and really the only help is getting God back in the picture. God follower. The question is, how close to the center of our worlds are we placing God? I mean, in all of the comings and goings of our day, is God in full view? Have we placed God in a way that we can see him in all things? Or do we have God stored somewhere way off in the distance, someplace we only visit on Saturday night? I remember that my family, one of our favorite spots that we used to love going to when we went to Florida was SeaWorld. Now, if you have never been to SeaWorld, let me tell you, that place is huge, huge, so huge that you really need that little map that they give you when you get in just to start finding your way around. And as it always seems to be, the dad's job seems to be to navigate these adventure park playlands, isn't it? Unfortunately, even with the map, man, I got lost. I got lost behind the Arctic region. I got lost in the endless walkways around the back of Shamu Stadium. And then trying to find the Cirque du Soleil that they all wanted to go to, I got turned around at the Walrus Show, and I walked smack dab into the dolphin pool. But then I figured something very important out. In the center of SeaWorld is the 400-foot-tall Sky Tower. It is centrally located, and you can see it from any place in the park. And I realized that the Sky Tower could be used as a focal point. That tower is my point of origin, the place that shows me where everything else is and how to get anywhere in the park. By focusing on the Sky Tower, I quickly found my way around the park. Well, gang, David, by wanting to place the Ark of God back in the tabernacle, is showing us that God needs to be our sky tower. God needs to be in full view for us as we navigate issues in our world. In our labors, in our responsibilities, in our work, we need to look up and see that God is in full view. He's with us, and he wants us to get our bearings from him on how we should carry out our work. In time of deep dilemmas and perplexing questions, we need to have God's insight and God's counsel in the center of our decision-making. Gang, repairing and righting broken issues in our lives begins by setting God as the divining rod and the play caller in our everyday lives. If we place God squarely in the center of our lives, we will have his constant reminding to be grateful for what we have. We will live with an attitude of love and acceptance towards others. We will have humble hearts that strive to live life to the full that God has promised us. Israel had forgotten all of that. Israel had locked God away, and there was no greater symbol of it than by placing the Ark of the Covenant in storage. But now, all that would change. Israel was going to bring the ark home. And let me tell you, an elaborate move it must be when you move the ark. God had laid out specific instructions and written them down for moving the ark. And as we said before, this is a very symbolic thing. And it teaches us about God and about ourselves. The first thing, number one, only Levites were allowed to move the ark. That means if you were a Levite from the tribe of Levi, then your profession was to serve in God's house, and you would be one of the people and only the only tribe that would be allowed to move the ark through those special poles. Number two, the Levite movers were to purify themselves, to go through an elaborate washing ceremony to purify themselves, showing God's absence of sin and showing how pure God is. The third thing, the ark was to be covered by the inner curtain of the tabernacle, as God shows us with that, that he cannot be viewed and understood casually. The fourth thing, it must be moved by inserting special poles through its rings and carried on the priest's shoulders. It had to go up high on the shoulders. No matter how far it was, it had to stay on those shoulders, showing the direct connection of us to God. You can't ever let go. Have to stay connected. And the exertion and the effort and the concentration and the balance that that requires was tremendous. And above all, the biggest rule, it must never, ever, ever be touched by human hands, symbolizing God's transcendence. We can't go and slap God on the back. The ark was a physical illustration of God and his relationship with Israel, and it was a powerful one. So, let's see what happened. Verse 3. They placed the ark of God on a new cart and brought it from Abinadab's house, which was on a hill. Uzzah and Ahio, Abinadab's sons, were guiding the ark as it left the house, carrying the ark of God. Ahio walked in front of the ark. David and all the people of Israel were celebrating before the Lord, singing songs and playing all kinds of musical instruments, lyres, harps, tambourines, castanets, and cymbals. But when they arrived at the threshing floor of Nacon, the oxen that were pulling the cart stumbled. And Uzzah reached out his hand and steadied the ark of God. Then the Lord's anger was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him dead because of this. So Uzzah died right there beside the ark of God. Wow. Okay, Bible students. This act of God is one of the most perplexing in all the Bible. Why? It's perplexing because here we have a man, Uzzah, who's seemingly trying to do a good thing. And it cost him his life. And gang, this move of the ark was destined for disaster right from the beginning. Did you notice the ark had been placed on an ox cart? It was then wheeled towards Jerusalem. Now, we mentioned five guidelines for moving the ark, and apparently four out of the five had not been followed. And then as the ark is about to tumble off the ox cart, the fifth guideline of not touching the ark, well, then that one's broken, and it costs Uzzah his life. Gang, if only David or the priests had looked at what God had written down for them, they would have seen the tragedy that their impetuousness was about to cause. Only Levites could move the ark. We learn in Chronicles 15, they were not Levites. The Levite movers must purify themselves. There was no purification. The ark must be covered by the inner curtain of the tabernacle. No covering was used. It must be moved by inserting special poles through rings at the base of the ark, demanding an exacting task of balancing the ark as it was carried on the priest's shoulders, no matter how far. Well, guess what? They put it in an ox cart. And above all, it must never be touched. Gang, the point here is this. Israel chose the easy way, not the right way. And so God shouts loud and clear through the death of Uzzah, this is not who I am, and this is not how things are to be done. Living by God's instructions, gang, We're living as we see fit is a life and death choice. Treat God's offer of salvation casually and ignore God's offer of salvation, expect tragedy to occur. Ignore God's way and his instructions and calamity will follow in your life. Israel had gotten away from God, and when they went back to God, slapping God on the back, throwing their arm around his neck, saying, "Hey, buddy, where you been?" Gone was the carefulness. Gone was the prudence that had always been a part of a relationship with God. Instead of Israel insisting on purified Levitical priests to move the ark, they chose a few cows. And to them, why not? It's easier. Instead of carefully balancing the ark on poles threaded through rings at the bottom, Israel threw the ark into a cart, and that is the equivalent of tossing it into the back of a pickup truck. No effort, no delicacy of handling God, and to them, why not? It's much easier to do it this way instead of the more laborious and taxing way that God laid out. And when their plan failed and the ark was about to tumble, all instruction was cast to the wind and they just grabbed the thing. At that moment, all God's input was negated and they figured we just gotta get her done. And with those choices to do things the easy way instead of God's way, well, we see the sad result. Gang, God has a plan for you and a plan that is all laid out in God's mind. It's like a treasure map. It's like a treasure map for your life. God has a treasure map laid out for your life. God's purpose, God's provision, and God's best are waiting for you right there, smack dab in the center. They're waiting for you in the center of it. But now with God, he doesn't reveal everything that the treasure life includes. Instead, God gives us the map folded up. And he says, "Here, you can hold on to the map, but I want to be the one who leads you by the hand. You don't need to look at the map. I'll tell you." And so we go with God along the way with God instructing us and takes us through the map. He tells us to make a turn towards something. He tells us to turn away from something. Some people do that, some don't. Maybe God tells us that he wants us to help in a ministry. Maybe help out in a ministry at church. Or maybe help a person that we know, but we don't. Maybe God tells us to share our faith in God with a person whose life is misfiring, but we don't take that path that God is telling us to. Or maybe God says, stay away from that person, steer clear of that person, or don't go after that thing just yet, but we do it anyway. Well, each time that we do that, each time we take these little shortcuts with God, each time we cut a corner off of God's map for us. We tear that corner off. It's just a corner. Each decision to take an easier road than the one God tells us to take, it cuts a corner off the map. And we're like, well, it's just a corner. I've still got the good stuff. And each time we fail to wait on God's best and God's timing, well, we cut a little corner off of it. And each time we settle for doing things the less taxing way, well, we tear the map corner off. Well, what Israel found out was that cutting corners can be fatal for us, and cutting corners can take the easier way that we're taking the easier way can take the treasure. Can take the treasure right out of God's life for you. I thought I was just cutting corners. You thought. When God said no. Remember, this all started with David trying to right Israel's ship. Israel had fallen off their jack and had crashed badly. David wanted to get them back up where they belong. David wanted to get Israel back to God. And friends, that's the good news. No matter how badly we have fallen or crashed, we can get righted. No matter how bad, no matter what your truck looks like laying in the driveway, it can be righted. But to do that, you have to do it correctly. Without causing more damage, we have to do it God's way. David wanted God back at the center of Israel's life so bad that David just did something. He just made something happen. How he did it didn't matter to him. And friends, that is the problem. Even if the intentions are good, we just can't go ahead and do things our way. God had told them how to move the ark, and God tells you and me how we are to navigate our ups and downs and our sideways. We have a lot of young people heading back to school. I love working with the college and career people. I love talking with them and even our high school kids. And I know you're all heading back to school. And you know what that means? Love is on the horizon. I can feel it. But let me tell you, young people, let me give it to you right now. When you're looking for that person that you want to start dating, God says the first thing we need to do is evaluate the person's spiritual condition. Evaluate the person, say, do we both love and value Jesus Christ? Do we both worship and promote Jesus and his ways? Do we both follow Jesus and give him the control of our life? That's the first thing you need to evaluate in deciding to date someone. That's God's way. Westbridge, we can't just jump to the, well, we have the same things in common and we're attracted to each other. That's our way. And our way is the same as throwing the Ark of the Covenant into a trailer. Don't get me wrong. I, too, sometimes just want to do something. But when we do, our ark starts to fall. I know a woman who has a daughter, and they are nice people. But the mother has a terrible way of correcting her daughter. Every time the mother gets stressed and annoyed, she barks at this girl and corrects her for the most unimportant things imaginable in the most harsh way. The mom loves the daughter. I know that she loves the daughter. And she wants to guide her, but she's not doing it the way she should. Instead of taking the time to formulate her words in a way that's best for her daughter, she takes the easy way, her way, and every time she does, she takes the risk of maybe this one will be the one that will knock the ark off the cart. Maybe this one will be the final straw for her daughter. Maybe this one will leave a wound that will last a lifetime. Friends, if our lives have fallen off the jack and have crashed in the driveway, we need to, number one, move God back into the center of our life and make him the focal point of our life. Number two, we need to allow God to show us the repair steps. It's not that he doesn't want to repair it. He wants to. He's going to show us the right way to do it. We follow those steps. It doesn't matter what your heart tells you you should do. It doesn't matter what your friends tell you you should do. It doesn't matter what Dr. Phil or Oprah tell you you should do. It only matters what God says and what God says you should do. And God told them how to move the ark like this. And they didn't. So David's desire to place God back in the center of Israel's life had taught them a costly lesson, but an important lesson. Let's see where this all goes. Verse 10. So David decided not to move the ark of the Lord into the city of David. Instead, he took it to the house of Obed-Edom in Gath. The ark of the Lord remained there in Obed-Edom's house for 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and his entire household. Gang, so David puts the brakes on his process of picking Israel back up off the driveway, and David sends the ark into storage, this time in Gath, to the house of a man named Obed-Edom, and something incredible happens over the next 3 months. during this time, Obed-Edom is greatly blessed by God. He is super healthy. He is prosperous, and his entire home increases. Verse 12 tells us, then King David was told, the Lord blessed Obed-Edom's household and everything he has because of the ark of God. So David went there and brought the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with a great celebration. After the men who were carrying the ark of the Lord had gone six steps, David sacrificed a bull and a fatted calf. And David danced before the Lord with all his might, wearing his priestly garment. So David and all the people of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouts of joy and blowing of ram's horns. Aha! We see a change. Actually, in 1 Chronicles 15, where the story is retold, it tells us what David said at that time. David said this in 1 Chronicles 15, verse 12. David said, you are the leaders of the Levite families. You must purify yourselves and all your fellow Levites so you can bring the ark of the Lord, the God of Israel, to the place I have prepared for it. Because you Levites did not carry the ark the first time, the anger of the Lord, our God, burst out against us. David says, we failed to ask God how to move it properly. So the priests and the Levites purified themselves in order to bring the ark of the Lord, the God of Israel, to Jerusalem. Then the Levites carried the ark on their shoulders with its carrying poles, just as the Lord had instructed Moses. David also ordered the Levite leaders to appoint a choir of Levites who were singers and musicians to sing joyful songs to the accompaniment of harps, lyres, and cymbals. And so the celebration begins. God is coming to reside in the center of Israel. As we close, one final thought should finish us up tonight. David had been corrected by God, hadn't he? It actually cost David greatly. But we need to recognize David's reaction to God's correction. Point three, David accepted the correction and he learned from it. This passage tells us that David thought about what had happened that fateful day during the first move, and when he did, David said, we messed up! We made a mistake, and we were corrected for it. David blames no one but himself, and he especially does not blame God. And because of it, he learns and grows and winds up here 3 months later in a day of celebration. That's how David handled it. I wonder how many people for the past 3,000 years have become mad at God for this when David didn't. But I believe the passage teaches us an even deeper faith skill. Isaiah 55:9. God says, for just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. You'll notice this passage doesn't ask to see if we agree with God. It only asks us to trust his opinion, which is vastly above our own, even if we don't see it or argue with it. I am coming across more and more people who, in their assessment of God, want to be able to agree with God's ways. They want to be able to stand alongside of God and approve of his actions and his thoughts. And when they don't agree with him or approve of his ways and thoughts, well then, God must be wrong. And I'm right. David watched one of his countrymen die trying to catch the ark. But David never considered God being wrong in the situation. Friends, it really all comes back to our faith. Do you believe and do you trust God? Not do you agree with God and do you approve of what he's doing? Faith says God is God and I am not, and I will trust him no matter what. Having no faith says, I know better than God. he did it wrong. So I'm sticking with me. That's the person who has no faith. David's words in 1 Chronicles chapter 15, verse 3 were, we failed. Not God is mean. Gang, my truck crashed in the driveway because I was careless. Not because God created gravity. Where is your life at today? Do you need some repair? Do you need some pick-me-up? Do you need some help? Well, God says, put me back in the center of your life. Make me your guiding light. Make me your sky tower that you'll always see. Make my word, going back to my Bible, the first thing you look to when you need truth. And let's do this thing my way, God says, by a God who is more smart and more healthy and more correct than anything you and I could ever come up with or anything you and I could ever agree with. Friends, no matter where you are tonight, let God's correction be a voice of love and truth leading you to life eternal and life to the fullest here on earth. You may well have crashed, but God is the very best at picking up crashed vehicles in driveways. He will jack that thing right back up, give you better stance, and get you on solid footing. As the band comes back and the worship leaders and the prayer team, I encourage you, talk to God. Don't let tonight be something that King David got right and we didn't. Don't let this be, boy, God seems mean. David didn't go there. David said, whatever the problem, it's got to be with us. God's perfect. And if God is saying, hey, I just want to send you a wake-up call. You've gotten your eyes off of me. You haven't been looking to me, and I want you to. You can't do things your way. No matter how much you want, no matter how right it seems, I just need to get her done. I need to get on with this thing. I'm tired of being the way I am. I want to be the next thing. And God says, it's not time yet. There's steps that have to be gone through to do it right. And if you don't, well, that ark is going to fall. And that's not a good thing. Let's stand and worship a God who is greater than anything we can agree with, greater than anything that we think we know. He is the great I am. Lord, I hope that tonight we come to this story and leave it saying, you are the great I am, and I am not. But you want to connect with me. You actually want to put your spirit inside of me through what Jesus Christ did on the cross. And I pray if there's any here tonight who are looking to put God in the center of their life, they would say yes to the gift that Jesus Christ offered when he gave up his life on the cross for our sins. If there are any here tonight, Lord, they're saying, I need you in the center. Help them to admit, I've gotten away. I failed, as David said. I made mistakes. And then I pray, Lord, that you'd help them to have the courage to say, Lord, forgive me. Let what you did on the cross wash me clean. Become the center of my life. Place your spirit in my heart and guide me from anywhere I am, that I would always see you because you are inside. Let me not tear that incredible destination you have for me out of my map by cutting corners. Let us do things your way. And Lord, I pray that you continue to lead us on in a way that advances your kingdom, in a way that you would be pleased. Let us be people who live for you, not people who ask you to live for us. Lord, we leave ourselves in your hands, knowing it's the best place to be. In Jesus' name, amen. We spend the last 5 minutes of our service talking with one another. Please don't leave. Enjoy one another's company. The band will not break down for 5 minutes. Enjoy. The prayer team is over here if you need prayer. And I'll be over there with them. We'll see you next week, 7 o'clock.